But we'll pick up on that later in the hour because we don't want to wait. We don't want to make John Anik wait, man. This guy, somehow he accepted this request. I would have flushed this so fast. Would have said, no chance I'm going on with these buffoons in Toronto. I'm at Fight Island, dude. I'm halfway around the world. But he accepted the invite, and we can't thank him enough. And he joins us now, the voice of UFC, John Anik. What's up, John?
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you guys. It is 12:30 a.m. local time here in Abu Dhabi, but a lot of us, especially those who live on the east coast of the U.S. like me, we tried to stay on this time zone because, of course, we're cracking a mic on pay-per-view at 6 o'clock a.m. local. So it's been an adjustment. I'm hurting for certain, but the show must go on.
Well, you know, you mentioned that. I was thinking about it leading up to the card on Saturday, trying to get a read on body clocks, trying to get a read on preparation. You know, from your own experience, I guess, with you in the booth and you calling matches, I'm sure you've never called a UFC card. In fact, I know you haven't at that time of the day. But what about the fighters? Did you pick up on anything that maybe looked a little bit off because they were trying to be on Eastern time zone or a Vegas time zone, whichever one they were working off?
A lot of them have handled it pretty well. The closest point of comparison for me on the broadcasting side would be Australia, but it's just a little bit different. Your call time is not 1 o'clock in the morning. But for the fighters, I think the biggest challenge was getting through that 48-hour quarantine. And I think some of them might have been sneaking into the hotel room of a coach to try to hit mitts or something. But again, you're talking about guys who need to be cutting weight and ideally be outside in this Middle Eastern heat. And instead, they have to lock up for 48 hours and figure out a way to cut weight and stay sharp and do all of that. So I think not so much the time zone. They're conditioned to competing all over the world and at varying hours. But I think that quarantine was a real bear for some of these fighters. And I think it went well at UFC 251, but we did 15 more fighter meetings today getting ready for the Wednesday show. And a lot of them, they don't really know how they're going to feel. It's kind of a wait and see, and they're hoping for the best.
John, how about for you broadcasting? I've heard some of the earlier first fights the UFC put on where the fighters could hear the announcers, and they could hear whether it's what you're saying, your analysts are saying, the advice that they would be giving them, and they were reacting to what you say. So have you had to tone it down or have that cross your mind in the middle of a fight? Like, if I'm saying he could be doing this, can he hear me, and should he be hearing that?
What a crazy backdrop for us calling fights that the athletes are hearing what we're saying. I mean, when we sort of came out of the global pandemic in May in Jacksonville, we didn't have any plexiglass in front of us. Now I have what looks like a hockey board in front of me. So that sort of sends the audio back into my face a little bit. It doesn't mean that the athletes can't hear us. I mean, Max Holloway and I were going back and forth on Saturday night. But in Jacksonville, man, I got to tell you, it was crazy because every time I would call out a strike that a fighter didn't think really did any appreciable damage, he's looking over at me as if to say, dude, I roll with that punch. Lower your voice, you know? So it wasn't an ideal circumstance for us back then. But you guys know, you put on the cans, the headset, you're in sort of a tunnel, and you just can't worry about that stuff. But in a perfect world, we wouldn't be dealing with it. The only time I really try to tone it down is when I'm sort of passing along mid-round or mid-fight corner advice and trying to get my analyst take on that. I'll lower my level and I'll lower my voice just so that the opposing corner doesn't pick up any audio there.
We're chatting with the voice of the UFC, John Anik. He's over there at Fight Island, and there's another card coming up Wednesday night. When we look back on Saturday night, the main event, Masvidal Usman. Usman holds on, wins by decision. It wasn't aesthetically the most, you know, beautiful fight. If someone's looking for a brawl, if you've been covering the sport for a long time, maybe you saw the beauty in it. Masvidal sells himself. This guy has just skyrocketed in terms of popularity, in terms of pay-per-view buys, in terms of buzz, and he took the fight on short notice. With that being considered, if he had a full camp, how different do you think that fight would have looked?
Well, I think Usman probably gets him 7 or 8 out of 10 times. And with respect to Jorge Masvidal, one of my favorite fighters on this roster, Kamaru Usman took the fight on short notice, too. You know, Gilbert Burns pulled out. He flew to Dallas. He put on 8 pounds. And then as he was cracking a Bud Light, it was to be his first beer in 10 months, he got the call that they had a replacement opponent. So, yes, Kamaru Usman had a full training camp. Jorge Masvidal certainly brought in some wrestlers, but he wasn't trying to peak for that date necessarily. So I do think it stands to reason that maybe he would be more competitive if he was training for July 11th. But I think both guys were dealing with a lot of extenuating circumstances. Coming over to Fight Island late, they had the furthest thing from a normal fight week, right, in terms of cutting the weight and going through all of the protocols and the COVID-19 testing and everything else. Masvidal is as talented a boxer as we have in the game. He's as underrated a grappler as there is in that division. But Kamaru Usman has just imposed his will on 12 straight victims in the UFC. And I know people don't like the George St. Pierre comparisons, even though they both won 12 in a row. There are two big differences. George St. Pierre's fights were almost all title fights. This was just the second defense for Usman. And with respect to Kamaru, who I think can do this for a long time, George made the takedown a thing of beauty. Go watch his fight against Thiago Alves at UFC 100. It was beautiful to watch. He had the Vegas crowd oohing and aahing with every shot. Everybody was eating out of his hand. And Usman hasn't resonated with fans to that extent. So I think he needs to work on his finishing instincts, particularly when it comes to his chokes, because I think when he starts to submit some guys and put some guys away, he'll have a fan base that will start to catch up with Masvidal's. But he's a great champion and certainly showing no signs of slowing down. He didn't have a scratch on him when we interviewed him on the post-show.
Max Holloway certainly had a couple scratches on him at the end of the fight when Volkanovski went to a decision. Was that a close? It felt like that was quite a close one. How did you see that fight?
So we have a lot of close title fights, as you guys well know. 25 minutes, 5 rounds. There are only 3 scorecards in the world that matter. I think in a perfect world, you'd have at least 5 judges, which would lessen the margin for error. I think the real issue is there just aren't that many elite judges out there. Max Holloway had a knockdown in round 1, a knockdown in round 2. I thought he edged round 3, and then Volkanovski won rounds 4 and 5. But the seminal moments were all Holloway's, right? The 2 knockdowns early. I mean, Volkanovski certainly came on strong, but I guess I would like to see a scoring system or a judge that rewards Max for those 2 big moments early. So I wasn't surprised that there was a lot of venom coming from the fan base. I reserve the word robbery for decisions that aren't like this. I would say that Max maybe was robbed of a win that would have restored order for him in this division, but I don't know how you can call it a robbery when you look at that third round. Essentially, the fight was decided in a 90-second span in round 3, and Volkanovski, in the eyes of 2 judges, you know, did enough.
With John Anik, the voice of the UFC, what about Jose Aldo? And, you know, you're there live. It was pretty gruesome. He ends up getting knocked out. It's one of the all-time great fighters, and he's, you know, it's looks like, or it feels like it's getting to the end of the road for him, even though he's still relatively young. But when you're watching that fight and you're calling it, so I'm sure you're in a different kind of mindset, but did that feel like maybe it should have been called before, you know, the 5th round?
Oh, yeah. I mean, maybe in that moment, right, when he was getting pounded out on the ground, I am much more in favor of a premature stoppage than a late stoppage. I think the real issue is for referees is that you're sort of ubiquitously praised if you let a fight go and the guy comes back. And when you stop a fight early, you have hundreds of thousands of MMA fans, you know, threatening your life. So I think referees in general have great pause to stop a fight early, especially a title fight. You know, we saw recently with Henry Cejudo and Dominic Cruz, Keith Peterson was maybe criticized for stopping that fight a little bit too early. So I think in a title fight, the referees want to give the athlete the benefit of the doubt. Piotr Jan is a beast, and I think big picture, this is a loss that will age gracefully for Jose Aldo. I'm not in the business of retiring fighters. I would also say to you guys that Aldo really went through wholesale lifestyle changes, as I said on the broadcast. So when we sit down with him as a bantamweight, he's actually more pleasant and in tune with what we're saying than he was at 45, when it seemed like he was staring death in the face every weight cut. So I still believe that he can contend at 135 pounds, but you're right. There are miles despite him being on the right side of 35.
John, what's it like there at Fight Island Abu Dhabi? Is it like just like a hotel and a ring? What's the setup like for you guys, for the UFC, and for all the participants as they go to this very unique place in the world to put on some fights?
You know, I'll try not to cuss. I mean, this whole experience is just crazy. You got people coming into my hotel room in complete hazmat suits, goggles, facial shield, mask, gloves, doing COVID tests in my nose and my throat, wristbands and masks and security checks and temperature checks everywhere you go. And thankfully, most people are sort of adhering to the protocol. And you can be sure if you're walking around without a bracelet, there are people who are going to escort you back to your room. So this feels like the safest place in the world to be calling a live sporting event. But the whole atmosphere is just totally weird. Obviously, we're sleeping all day and staying up all night. But I give a lot of credit to the UFC brass because they've been very solution-oriented really since COVID hit in early March. And the proof's in the pudding. You know, we banged out almost a dozen shows at this point. So another one Wednesday. Here we go.
Yeah, can't wait. It's going to be a great one Wednesday night. You will have the call. We look forward to it. Really, really appreciate you putting in hours and accepting our invitation, John. We'll do it again down the road. Stay safe over there, buddy. Thank you.
My pleasure, gents. Thanks for having me.
There's John Anik over Skype, too, with a headset, which is
impressive.
That's pro. Impressive. That's a
Veteroni right there. Look, yeah. He knows what's up, middle of the night. Although, according to him, sleeps during the day, stays up all night. So he's probably just getting up for the day right now, go for his workout and get on his regular schedule because his call time is at like 4 in the morning.
Right, true.
Generally speaking, for the afternoon fights. And, Brian, you know my history. I'm not much of a pugilist. I'm not much of a fighter. I don't really care for them. I got to tell you, because the UFC was first out of the gate, Saturday nights I've gotten the habit of watching the UFC fights with my youngest daughter, my 14-year-old, and we saddle up every Saturday like, okay, fight
let's
night,
go.
Let's
what
go.
What do we have? Who's
and like,
on the card?
I don't know the fighters per se unless they're very well known. I don't know them like you do or maybe like the biggest fans do, but we because they were the first up, I've come to watch a lot of it over the last 6 weeks. And so, you know, John's voice and the shows they put on and how they've kind of traveled around trying to find the spot that they could do it. They've done a good job getting their product to market before just about anybody else.
Yeah, they really have. I mean, Dana White took a ton of heat early for being brash, mm-hmm. for being cocky, for maybe being unsafe, and yet he pulled it off. And even the first card, remember, they had to pull a fighter because he tested positive. There's a couple of guys who haven't really had anyone in their corner because their crew have tested positive, yet they found a way to make cards work in Jacksonville, in Vegas, and now in Abu Dhabi, of all places, and it just continues to roll. And I agree with you. I think a lot of people have jumped on board with the UFC who maybe were fans but would be distracted by other sports, so they wouldn't fully invest, and now they're investing.